It's time to speak out on the original Speak Out radio show. Speak Out is a public affairs program that serves you, our listeners, and the community you live in. Speak Out is all about listener participation. So call in anytime during the show. 928-854-5687. That's 854-5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard on 106.7, 5, and 3. You can also listen at KNTRTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When Norm was out on the casting call, who did Cheers turn to?
The police!
When Mike Tyson became the youngest heavyweight champion in history and no sparring partners could be found, who did the champ turn to?
The police!
Now, this world-renowned barfly slash pugilist has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
He's only mortal, folks.
Paul LaVoy!
His pronouns are he, him, and hungry. Really?
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me, and I gladly stand up next to you when they met her still today. But there ain't no doubt.
And welcome to Speak Out this Friday, May 15th, 2026. I'm in a little somber mood just for the moment. It is Peace Officers Memorial Day, and I've had a lot of police officers in my life. I'm in Silent Witness organization, obviously, here in Havasu, and just wanted to salute those officers who patrol the streets for us, who solve the crimes, the detectives, the chiefs, the sergeants, the lieutenants, the captains. And if you have not been to a Fallen Officers Memorial or the Peace Officers Memorial, I get it mixed up because the official name is Peace Officers Memorial, but it's always on May 15th every year. But if you have not been to one of these memorials, it is very sombering. It's very, I don't even know the word for it right now. You really are proud to be an American when you look to see what the police officers do and how they sacrifice and how their families sacrifice by, you know, letting their husbands and wives work out there for us. All right, we are in Lake Havasu City at the City Maytag Speak Out Kitchen with No Sink. We got a very special show for you today. It is recorded, so do not call in. We have Catherine Haley, and she is a GOP candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. Catherine stopped in last week, I believe it was. It's the same week she went to see the London Bridge Republican Women, or one of the Republican Women's Clubs. I always get it messed up, so don't hold me accountable for that, okay? And so we sat down and did three segments, and I hope you enjoy it. And without further ado, we'll go to Catherine Haley. She is the GOP candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. She's in the studio, not calling on the phone. Catherine Haley, it's so nice to meet you, candidate for Arizona State Treasurer.
Thanks, Paul. It's really a joy to be here. It's a gift to be at Lake Havasu. Thank you so much for having me.
So you're ready for this whole hour thing, right?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about Catherine Haley. Not why you're running for state treasurer, but tell me about Catherine. Who is Catherine Haley?
Thank you for the question. I'm an Arizona native. I was born and raised in the Phoenix metro area. I grew up in Scottsdale. I'm an alum of Saguaro High School. Go Sabres. I have a career. I worked on Capitol Hill for U.S. members of the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate, helping to advance conservative policies. I worked in philanthropy, helping donors invest in communities all over our country, helping to create meaningful opportunities for education and workforce. And I'm a business owner. In my capacity as a small business owner, we help nonprofits all over the United States have strong governance structures. We're able to attract philanthropy and ultimately serve our local communities.
What kind of business?
It's a consulting company. We work at the intersection of nonprofits, public policy, and philanthropy.
What do you think? I'm going to go back just a second and take this from your answer. What do you think you learned on Capitol Hill?
I learned about hard work. I learned about being resourceful. You know, when you are working for a member of Congress who is serving their constituents back home, you learn to find answers and you learn to do research, not just get the surface answer, but get deep understanding of the policy and its implications for those local constituents.
How do you consider yourself resourceful?
Well, I think when I worked on Capitol Hill, I'll use an example. We had a rural health provider. They had previously received a certain reimbursement levels because they ran a federally qualified health center. Mm-hmm. Their reimbursement rates were cut. And I wanted to get to the bottom of that. I spent a lot of time with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services trying to understand why that specific rural, low-income community did not receive the same level of reimbursement. And it wasn't just reading articles or reading paper, but it was really diving into the complexities of how formulas are set, and was able to report back, unfortunately, that federally qualified health center was not going to get the same level of reimbursement because they were not seeing the patient population that would have designated a higher reimbursement rate. They did not like the answer, but spent a lot of time trying to get to the bottom of what that was.
How have you developed yourself personally, your personal growth, before you became a nonprofit CEO, correct?
My company is a for-profit business, but we do consult with nonprofit organizations.
I see. Okay.
I'm always learning. I listen to a number of different podcasts. I'm often reading. I look to various think tanks to hear what some of our leader thinkers are sort of talking about in the context of free markets and the economy. I also do a lot of reading and am part of different groups where we're constantly pressure testing ideas. So that is one area. And professionally, I'm always learning. So in the context of Capitol Hill, I worked for different members of Congress. I handled different issues. And depending on the member for whom I was serving, I handled a different issue portfolio. So I had to dive into different issues. Same thing for the context of the clients we get to serve. We don't just serve clients in the education and the workforce space, but we also serve those that are in mental health, organizations that are launching new nonprofits. So helping them steward them through that process of launching a new 501c3. We're always learning about how to attract philanthropy, not necessarily government dollars, but philanthropy, private dollars to help support these local organizations. So I would say I'm a student of life.
A lot of Republicans would consider that answer, especially talking about philanthropy and donating and nonprofits, and not so much Republican, like a social conservative, right? Where do you put yourself as far as MAGA goes? If that were to be the middle, the bench, you have liberal down here and ultra-conservative up here. Where would you put yourself on the scale?
I would say I'm a sort of a classical conservative. I believe in the role of limited government. I don't feel that government should be served. I feel like the government should serve the people. Mm-hmm. I believe in limited government, so constraining government. I'm not necessarily a populist. I'm sort of more about the consent of the governed and sort of taking the different perspectives into consideration.
Where does PBS fall into your belief system? Do they need some federal dollars, no federal dollars, or all private support?
I think it perhaps at one time the role of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting perhaps had a role to play. I think philanthropy has been able to step in. I understand that some communities felt that if you didn't have the federal support, well, then they couldn't have their local shows. I think we're starting to see that, yes, local philanthropy can fill in that role.
Right.
Perhaps sometimes government can serve as a catalyst, but ultimately I really think that neighbor helping neighbor, community supporting local organizations, ultimately is going to be the best steward and have the best impact.
Right. And I'll get to the treasurer parts in a moment.
Sure.
I just want to get to your belief system. Now, universities are famous for endowments, just like PBS is famous for endowments. Should the federal government help out in universities. Where are you on that?
That's really interesting. You know, the federal government, certainly universities apply for lots of research grants.
Correct.
Certainly there's been some institutions have been under fire, right? Many higher ed institutions participate in the Pell Grant program for low-income students that are going to college. Sometimes they also get subsidized or federally supported student loans. There are also higher ed institutions that do not participate. Hillsdale College, Grove City College, they do not participate in the federal student loan programs. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot more flexibility. They do have to fundraise in order to be able to provide scholarship dollars or conduct the research if they want to be a research institution. I think the Trump administration, their Department of Education, has done a great job of trying to identify the woke ideology that we've seen in increasingly in our higher ed institutions.
Right.
And have really sought to unearth the rationale behind that and also take steps to help them get back to hopefully more classical liberalism, where individuals are exposed to a diversity of ideas.
You're listening to a recorded interview with Catherine Haley. She is a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. Please do not call the Speak Out line at this time. Let's talk about why you're running for state treasurer. Kimberly Yee, how do you feel about the job that Kimberly Yee has done so far?
I think she's done an extraordinary job on behalf of Arizonans. She's in her eighth year of office. She has doubled our state assets. She has stewarded our resources in, I would say, a highly effective way. You might know that the treasurer's office has $64 billion cash management. So that's not including those dollars she's investing, but also the dollars that are coming in from the federal government and other resources. She's investing nearly $33 billion assets under management. That's the Public Lands Endowment Trust Fund. She's doubled that. I think that has been an incredible resource.
Right.
It helps invest in our local K-12 schools as well as in other resources. So I think she's done a very wise, I think she's been a great steward of our taxpayer dollars.
Do you have experience with investing money?
I have personal experience, my own personal investments, yes. But I would say I've been a longtime advisor to individuals that are investing in our communities. When I think of the role of the treasurer, yes, it's an investment, it's wise, but it's ultimately wise stewardship. It's about serving the Arizona taxpayer. And I would say that my experience has been about service and lifting others up, always mindful that it's not mine, but it's yours.
This is a tough topic because normally I don't get a state treasurer candidate. You just don't see it around the state. But now that Kimberly Yee is termed out,
yes.
You've got Nick Mansour's coming in also, and then I've interviewed your primary opponent. But do you feel that Kimberly Yee could have made even more money in the markets the way they've performed? Do you think it could have been three times more?
You know, I think the treasurer Yee has done an incredible job. When you think about the role of the treasurer, it's three things. It's about protecting the principal. It's about safety. It's not putting state dollars at risk, right? It's not your dollars. It's taxpayer dollars. The second, it's about making sure that those resources are liquid, you know, that they are available. Because you as the treasurer, you don't get just to invest in your own time frame. You have obligations to our state, our municipalities, our taxing authorities, our local communities, our school districts. So you have to make sure that those investments are readily available so they can get out into those local communities. And then the third goal, obviously, is yield. I think she's done a fantastic job in her first couple of years during the COVID pandemic. There was unbelievable growth. I think the rate of return has been a little bit less. I would say under the PLEDIF, the Public Land Endowment Trust Fund, she's doubled that.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, that investment portfolio is getting about 9.8% return, which is outperforming, you said earlier, higher education endowments. I would say that she's doing a fantastic job.
What do you plan to do with the staff that's already there that works in the state treasurer's office?
The treasurer's office has about 38 people in that office. It's a budget about $4.3 million. Mm. They are the investors and accountants on behalf of the state. One of the things that I certainly support and is currently the policy is continuing to maintain the investments on behalf of the local government investment pools. That is something that I believe that the treasurer's office should be doing rather than delegating that out to other investment offices that could potentially take fees that, frankly, I should think that should remain in our taxpayer pockets.
So are you speaking of State Street groups like that that invest the money for the state?
Yes, you could. Currently for the LGIPs, the local government investment pools, the state treasurer's office team invests on behalf of those local government entities.
Oh, okay. I thought they farmed it out.
So. They do have contracts with JP Morgan Chase, uh-huh. but then they also have contracts with several banks, you know, for cash management that are throughout the state. I think it's about five of them.
Let's go ahead and take our first break. And again, a reminder, folks, this interview is being recorded. We're talking with Catherine Haley. She is a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. We'll be back with more on Speak Out. I'm Paul LaFoy. All right, great conversation with Catherine Haley. We have two more parts to go. I just want to thank Pace for their participation yesterday with the raffle and what they do for the youth in our community, the Patriotic Patriotic Americans for Constitutional Education. Got it. So I got an email from Ginger Dodier. She is, I believe she's the president. Wonderful job mentioning all the sponsors. I was kind of concerned about that. I was auctioneering it. Thanks for your support, KNTR Talk. We had 300 students in the program for this past school year, and each received a challenge coin. So now you know where your raffle tickets and the proceeds went, besides materials for the classroom, stipends for the teachers, and also challenge coins. I have two of them. They're actually pretty cool. All right, let's go to break. If you have a question for Catherine, you can send us a text at 928-727-5566, 928-727-5566, and we'll should have some time at the end of the hour or at the end of the interview to go over your questions if you have one or two or comments for Catherine Haley. And I know she's listening online as well. All right, we're going to take a short break. Back with more in a moment on Speak Out. And we're back on Speak Out with Catherine Haley. She is a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. Speak Out, of course, broadcasting live from the City Maytag Speak Out Kitchen with no sink. This show, of course, not live. We are recorded. But you can find City Maytag, 911 North Lake Havasu Avenue. Also, Mojave Mortgage. Love those guys. By Mojave Electric Cooperative, by Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford. TWN Fiber Internet, by Salmon's Air Conditioning, by our newest sponsor on Main Street, Booby Falls Restaurant and Rodeo. And, of course, A&B Propane, abpropaneaz.com. You got a chance to meet the Havasu Republican women?
I did.
What did you think?
They are an incredible group of women. And a couple men. I think they have some associate members that are men. But talk about high energy. These are women and men who are educating their neighbors on what's happening in their community. They are getting out the vote. They are reminding individuals that June 24 through July 17, I believe, is when you can do early voting. And then, of course, the primary day is July 21. But what they are doing for your kids in your community with backpacks and school supplies to shoes, it was just awesome. Scholarships, they're supporting young people as they pursue their education. I mean, talk about a dynamic, awesome group of women.
I know you're not running for Secretary of State, but I want to talk about elections.
Okay.
Talk about early voting. How do you feel about the process of early voting, vote by mail, all of that? I come from a time when, you know, I was a kid, you voted absentee or you voted on election day. That's how I vote. I vote on election day. How do you feel about the whole process now, including mail-in ballots?
You know, I do believe in election integrity. I do believe that registered Arizona voters are the ones that should be voting in our elections, not those that are not registered and are not Arizona citizens. So I do, right off the top of that, that's where I stand. I do see the advantage of early voting and mail-in ballots. Arizona historically has had a long history of mail-in ballots, and they also... I would say Republicans historically have dominated the early voting, in part because once you get your vote in, that gives a candidate an opportunity to target the other individuals that have not yet voted. You can see where individuals are, you can figure out where they have voted, and then you can really target your message and really get out the vote, especially those that wait for Election Day. So hard stop, I believe that registered Arizonans, U.S. citizens should be voting in our elections, but I also see that there are tools that are available that will allow individuals to do early voting or absentee ballots, and then obviously individuals can vote on Election Day.
Do you see the treasurer's office, the job, as a full-time job, like where you would go every day, or would you be able to work from home? How would you handle that if you were offered the opportunity to go hybrid, for example?
I think different treasurers have handled that responsibility in different ways. I understand some of the staff is across this state, but at the end of the day, you need to be remembering who you're serving. It's about Arizona taxpayers. It's about lifting them up and making sure that every single investment, every single decision is focused on Arizonans. So I think the treasurer's office spends a lot of time outside of the office, traveling the state, touching base with all 15 counties, engaging local communities. I think Treasurer Yee has done a great job, and I would certainly carry on this tradition of financial literacy, going to places throughout our state, helping to educate our youth, as well as our senior citizens, our families, and our veterans about, you know, their own personal wise stewardship and financial budgeting. So if I were only going to ever sit in my office and do the role of the treasurer, then I would not also be serving all 15 counties, which is part of the role of treasurer.
Now, this is your first time running for public office. Should you win, you'll be 1-0, right, as far as races go. Governor Hobbs, of course, is a political veteran. She's been, I believe, a state senator. She was Secretary of State as well. You've got Andy Biggs, if he wins as governor. I mean, he's a congressman. He's also been a state senator. Right. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is you'll be probably working a little bit with both of those people should they win the governor's office in the next election. Do you think that the Arizona treasurer has an active role in working with the governor of the state?
I think there is a certain role as an elected leader, along with the other elected statewide leaders of our state and our legislature. There is a role for the treasurer to interact with the different divisions of government. Mm-hmm. Yes, my hope is that come November 3rd, Arizona does a clean sweep and we elect Republicans from the governor, lieutenant governor for the first time, secretary of state, attorney general, treasurer, superintendent, mine safety, and we preserve the legislature and all the way down. This is a really big election. I know that you think that, Paul. I know I certainly do. And the role of the treasurer is certainly to work with the departments and agencies and the other executives of the state, and I certainly will do so, but I will also hold my ground and maintain the jurisdiction that I have over the state treasurer's office.
Republican Party-wise, the key is to get the vote out, get people out to vote, because when Trump's not on the ballot traditionally, turnout is down amongst Republicans, especially in primaries. What do you propose, or what do you tell those precinct committee people? How do you get the people out to vote from those different precincts that are Republican?
That's great. And I've been traveling the state. I've been to most of our counties. I speak at legislative district meetings and Republican club meetings. I communicate to them that, one, what they do every day to educate their neighbors is unbelievably important. They've been chosen by their peers to help knock on doors and to help educate the public. And I charge them, I was like, do not be apathetic about this election. voting in our primary is unbelievably important. Mm. I believe that Republicans specifically, Democrats often will clear the field. I think with Republicans, we want to give people a choice. Mm-hmm. And so I share that with the precinct committeemen and other volunteers and advocates. We got to knock on doors. We got to get the message out. And so as far as Mojave County, I've been able to get to know some incredible volunteers up here, and they were helpful in collecting signatures. So they were instrumental in us getting on the ballot. I've also encouraged them. Some of them are already ready to go put signs in lawns and on street corners. And as I've shared over the last few days, as I've met with Republican men and women, is that you have got to urge your fellow neighbors that they cannot sit out this election on July 21. So they are enthused. I think they recognize their charge and are excited to get the word out and say, hey, before you go away this summer, you got to vote.
And just a reminder, this is a recorded interview with Catherine Haley. She's a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. Again, a recorded interview. Please do not call the Speak Out line at this time. The last time I talked to you, I think you just cleared the petition process.
Yes.
How difficult was that? The reason I ask is some people have an easy time with it. And then the statewide offices, it depends on the turnout from the last election, right? It's a little bit tougher for those candidates. What was your experience?
Well, first of all, it was an incredible experience. We hopped into the race January 22nd of this year. A couple of weeks later, the legislature, they advanced policy to move the date up 2 weeks, as well as our signature deadline.
Right. How did that affect you guys?
Well, it certainly put a fire under our feet, and we had to work really hard. There was some shenanigans that were demonstrated by my opponent. And as a result of that, I think it empowered quite a few Republican women in particular to say, we are going to get out there and we are going to help collect signatures for you. I should say that there's a handful of women here in Mojave County, and they were exceptional. These are women that by night they were spending the night in a hospital for their closest friend who had difficult surgery and were in recovery. These were women that were spending more time helping to support our local VFW members, making sure that they had access to food, particularly those that were food insecure. These are women that they were like, in addition to doing all of those things, we're going to go get signatures for you. So we turned in 10,230. I think we needed to get 7,558. I believe that was the right number. I might be off by a few, but it was an incredible experience. They were challenged. My opponent had a friend of his challenge our petitions. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they had to ask the judge to withdraw the challenge. So we are on the ballot, and I'm incredibly grateful to those that helped get us here.
Congratulations. It brings up another thought I had. Why is it that Republicans always seem they don't get on the same page like Democrats, lockstep, always? You know, even if half of them are wrong, you're gonna walk that way, or you're not getting any funding. Why do you think Republicans have a tendency to eat their own? And I ask everybody this, by the way.
Yeah, I also think when you have an open seat, I think individuals want to have a choice. I don't think that all Republicans are uniform. We're not robots.
Right.
You know, we have independent thinking, and I think that is part of who we are as Republicans, as conservatives, as independents, as libertarians. You know, we want to be able to think for ourselves, and therefore we want to select the person that best reflects our values.
For myself personally, I always say I'm not Republican enough. My audience knows that. I'm about 80% on the same page with most Republicans. So
okay.
Let's talk
but
about...
But I think that that speaks to the plurality within our party. We allow individuals to be able to think for our own. We don't have, you know, some structure that says, well, this person's next, so get in line.
I want to talk about AZ529 program. All
yes.
Right? Now, Kimberly Yee has done she's done a fine job in promoting this program.
Absolutely.
Promoting participation, getting her face out there with a lot of people only know that because of the commercials on television for
exactly.
AZ529, of course, the education accounts for children, for parents to put money in for their children to go to school later. How would you grow that program, or how do you feel about that program, first off, and then how would you grow that program?
Gosh, the 529 counts are incredible. Historically, they've only been used for higher education. You save today for the future for higher education. In the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act, a provision was included actually to include for K through 12 education. Mm-hmm. So individuals could put this into an education savings account to use just for higher ed, but now you could use it for K-12. Well, that provision was codified in the One Big Beautiful Bill. But our members of Congress did one other thing that I think is super cool, and this would be part of how I promote the 529s, and that is including workforce readiness and apprenticeship-type education opportunities. So not only are we educating kids today, mm-hmm. you can save for kids' education today to use for K through 12 if you pursue education learning as well as private school tuition, but you could also not only just go to higher education, but you can also do workforce. And I think that just speaks to this moment that we're in. Certainly individuals want to pursue a higher education, but others are, think of the individual that is mid-career and recognizes that their job might be obsolete in the future. They could use their 529 account to go through a job retraining program that helps them gain the skills they need in order to pursue meaningful work. That, I think, is super cool. So as treasurer, I would continue to promote the 529s, help educate families that this is an incredible way to save for their children, but also to help educate individuals, say, hey, if you've got a loved one, if you've got a kid that is meaningful to you, you can invest in those 529s as well.
I haven't researched the data or anything, but do you know if those accounts are being utilized and if they're having a success rate?
We have only about 100,000 accounts that are currently being invested with the Treasurer's Office. Mm-hmm. I think we can certainly grow that. We have 1.1 million public school age kids, and I think we can certainly grow. And some of it is just helping, and that's part of financial literacy. That's how we can help educate families that here's a tax-saving opportunity, as well as, you know, grandparents and friends. If you have a godparent, well, why don't you invest in my kid's 529 account? That's what a gift.
It used to be when I was a kid, they'd buy you a savings bond, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Find the savings bond, and 18 years later, it's worth $50 more, right? I think we're doing a little bit better with AZ529. Pretty good spot to take a break. You ready for a break then?
Sure. All right. Thanks so much, Paul.
Catherine.
And thanks to all of your listeners for listening to us.
You're welcome. And Catherine Haley, our guest, she is a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. I'm Paul Lavoie, and Speak Out will continue. Stay with us.
And it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. All brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
Welcome back to Speak Out. I'm Paul Lavoie. Again, this interview is being recorded. We're talking with Catherine Haley. She is a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. Speak Out brought to you in part by Western Arizona Regional Medical Center, also Springburg Wealth Management by the Chair, Laughlin Ranch, also Mojave College, Shooters Outpost, Solar Power by Esme Electric, Dorita's Place, and by Legacy Rehab and Care. And don't forget to buy local, or it is buy local. I'm sure you can agree with that, Catherine, right?
Yes, buy local, absolutely.
Now, where you're from, the Scottsdale area or Phoenix, Maricopa County, is there a shop local mantra there for people to keep the money local?
I would say, like, keep Scottsdale. Scottsdale, there's an interesting phrase about the Old Town Scottsdale and just preserving that identity.
Okay.
So I would say absolutely.
So I understand that you were a CEO that helped nonprofits.
We
probably should have clarified. It's a certain type of nonprofit that you helped grow. This makes a big difference too, especially probably to conservatives. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So our firm, Oak Rose Group, we come alongside nonprofits to really help serve the local communities. Some examples are we've helped launch a private school investment fund that is helping to grow private schools. As someone who believes in education freedom and allowing parents to choose the best learning environment for their children, we need to be able to have the school supply that allows individuals to make that choice, particularly if our local private school options are at capacity. So for those that enjoy the Empowerment Scholarship accounts or the ESA or are participating in our STOs, making sure that families have that option, I think, is really important. And our company works with those organizations to get them off the ground, to attract individual philanthropy from local community members, and make sure that those organizations have got strong governance structures so that they're able to endure and to really help serve their primary customer.
We have a rule on the show about acronyms, by the way. You have to qualify the acronym or it's a 15-yard penalty. You said SGO? What's SGO?
STO. So
STO.
School Tuition Organization,
gotcha.
STO.
Okay.
So for those that just paid their Arizona taxes, if you want, we have various, you can redirect your dollars for a tax credit. And one of those is for education. So you can give to what's called an STO, a Scholarship Tuition Organization.
If you were able to organize a DOGE, for example, an audit of the treasurer's office, how would you do it and would you do it?
So I think my opponent has talked a lot about doing a once-in-a-lifetime DOGE audit. And I think as conservatives, as elected leaders, that should be every day. We shouldn't do it just one time. We should always be looking for efficiency and mm-hmm. opportunities to root out waste, fraud, and abuse. So as treasurer, I commit to doing that not just once, but every day. I do think that doing government audits, that is the role of the Auditor General's office, and it is a tool of the legislature to make sure that our policies within the state government are being implemented and that funding that has been appropriated or allocated by the legislature is being followed. As treasurer, I think there are certain ways that you can identify when things are not quite right.
How's that?
So, and I take this from Treasurer Yee. There's a local school district in Maricopa County. You might know, but maybe not. Maybe your listeners don't know that funding for traditional public education, charter schools as well, because they're public schools, mm-hmm. that comes out about three times a year. It goes to our county treasurers. It then is deployed out to our local school districts. There was a school district that was waiting for its next
disbursement
of uh-huh. funds. And they were not going to make payroll. So they requested an advance on state aid, state aid. So that's the state formula that goes out to our public schools. Treasurer Yee thought it was a little bit odd.
That
given
kind of brings up alarm bells, doesn't it?
It does. And this is where I think you as treasurer should be following the dollars. How are these dollars going out? When do districts come back? So she convened the county treasurer, John Allen, who has endorsed our campaign, the superintendent of public instruction, Tom Horn, the superintendent of that school district, and said, hey, let's get together, let's figure out what your situation is, mm-hmm. and let's make sure you bring your chief financial officer, your CFO. Well, it turns out the district didn't have a CFO. She's
wow.
like, okay, well, bring your director of finance. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that one either. When they went through the budget, they were able to identify, actually, this district was not almost out of money, but actually had a surplus. And they didn't need that advance on state aid.
It wasn't being distributed correctly.
They just didn't have the right person. And so I think this is an important role for the treasurer's office to be able to really go out and help educate communities the role that the treasurer's office can play in helping those local taxing authorities, which I would say school districts are included in that. They can issue mm-hmm. bonds or go to the public, vote and approve a bond, and then have that. I think there's a role for the treasurer's office to help educate and make sure that they have the support they need to be able to really carry out their fiscal responsibility, their fiduciary responsibility to their local communities.
And again, you're listening to a recorded segment with Catherine Haley. She's a Republican candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. This is a recorded segment, so please do not call the Speak Out line at this time. Thank you. I pretty much got the feeling that you're in favor of Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, right?
Yes, I'm a huge fan of the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts or the ESAs.
Do you How do you feel about the waste, fraud, and abuse that's been levied against that program, say, from Channel 12 and that? We have an interview on our website with myself and the education policy director from Goldwater Institute about that.
Is that Matt Beinberg?
Matt Beinberg.
He's extraordinary.
Exactly. You can find it on our website.
He is a fantastic leader.
I agree with you. Where do you fall on that? Do you think that there's any waste, fraud, and abuse, some or none?
I would say there's probably less than 2% of misspend in the ESA program, the Empowerment Scholarship Account. And that sometimes, frankly, and I should say I serve on the State Board of Education. We do have fiscal oversight of the ESA program. Mm-hmm. So when there is mismanagement, so I would say that the Department of Education, they see the day-to-day operations, and they are able to do risk-based auditing to kind of figure out what's happening, how are dollars being spent. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes that sort of waste is, or mismanagement or the fraud is that families have used their ESAs to purchase backpacks. That used to be an allowable expense. It's not anymore.
Oh, I see.
And so typically what happens is the department says, hey, you've not used your dollars as they're supposed to. They put a freeze on the program. That family has to pay the dollars back.
Right.
And if they don't do that, the program stays frozen. That issue is referred to the State Board of Education, and then we refer that on to the Attorney General's office. So I think the program, when we've seen egregious efforts to, I would say, fraud the taxpayer, it's caught, it's identified, and it's prosecuted.
You mentioned the State Board of Education. Who reports to the State Board? I'm not familiar with that whole dynamic.
Yeah, I was appointed to the State Board of Education in 2022 by Governor Ducey. I was confirmed by the State Senate in 22. The State Board of Education is a governing sort of regulatory body. The legislature obviously passes the policy, and the State Board sets forward the rules and the regulations that the Department of Education ultimately carries forward.
Makes sense.
And it constitutes of 4 public members. They have a charter school representative, they have a county superintendent, a community college representative, one of our 3 university presidents, public university, they serve on that. Our superintendent of public instruction sits on that board. He's the only elected one, or she, depending on. And then we have a superintendent that serves. So it's representative of a variety of different constituencies. And we also have an educator that serves on that board. And it's all sort of thinking about the policies and regulations that are before the state.
Speaking of education, financial literacy, you talked about this earlier. Can the treasurer's office, if you're elected, take the lead on financial literacy and maybe putting some sort of program in our schools? I think it's badly needed. I mean, some schools do it already, but it's more of almost an elective. Is it something we could put into the curriculum?
In some ways, it's already there. It's part of our civics education requirements. And some schools, I think, do a really good job, and I think others can do a lot better job. As you know, with any time you mandate anything, there's always a trade-off. What do you give up? Without necessarily extending the school day. And so I know that that's been a passion project of Treasurer Yi. It's something that I see incredibly important. Currently, it's often as part of either the economics course or the government course. It kind of gets lodged in there. But I'd be interested to figuring out how can we best serve Arizona students so that they have that strong foundation so that when they go into the world, they're able to make wise financial decisions on behalf of themselves and their loved ones.
Right. It's something, I mean, I listen to Dave Ramsey quite a bit, and it's something that's rarely taught in the home when it should definitely be taught in the home. I mean, at least if the parents are good at managing their money and budgeting and that sort of thing. So let's go ahead and wrap this up and tell me why Catherine Haley is running for state treasurer and why people should vote for Catherine Haley.
Well, first of all, Paul, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a joy to be with you in studio, and shout out to Lake Havasu City. You guys are incredible. I'm running about service. I'm running on 3 things. Wise stewardship, making sure that we are not making risky decisions or big bets, but really making sure that Arizona taxpayers are always at the forefront, and that when we are making investments, that we're doing so responsibly, and also doing so in a way that protects the principle, grow it responsibly so that it's readily available for the roles and responsibilities that our funds going out into our communities are needed.
Sure.
So the second is about limited and efficient government. We talked a little bit about that. I believe that every day is Doge Day, not just once a day or once a year or once every 10 years. We need to do so responsibly. We need to understand who are the people that are part of the team. Are they focused on Arizona? Are they stewarding taxpayer dollars well? And then also being able to identify and root out the waste, fraud, and abuse. At the end of the day, the Treasurer's Office is about stewarding taxpayer dollars so we have them to be able to support education, public safety, border security. The last is if we can do those first two, then we can do the last, and that's maintaining our lower taxes. Ideally, it would be great if we didn't have any taxes, but that's not our situation. But keeping our taxes low is really important to me, and making sure that individuals have their own resources in their own pockets to make their own financial decisions. Just last is I'm about service. At the end of the day, I want to make sure that we are lifting up Arizona's incredible resources, but also making sure that Arizona's are first and foremost. I would really be honored to have Mojave County support, and I'm excited to be in this race.
Catherine Haley, ladies and gentlemen, and again, she's running for state treasurer. And tell people when early voting starts, ends, and all of that.
Sure. I just heard this several times, so hopefully I'll get it right. June 21 is when early voting begins. It wraps up on July 17th. Primary day is actually July 21. So we really urge you to get in there, support Republican candidates,
right.
Vote for me. And you can certainly learn more about me on our website at KatherineHaley4AZ.com. And that's KatherineHaleyforAZ.com.
Okay. Are you still looking for donations as well?
Absolutely. We absolutely need your financial support. We're building an incredible coalition across the state, and we would be honored to have your financial contribution.
All right. We're going to wrap this up. And again, thanks for being here. This interview recorded, of course. But you were in Havasu here in person, so we appreciate that.
Thanks so much, Paul. It was a joy to be here.
You bet. I'll be back with a final shot in a moment, and I'll talk about especially the candidates forum that's coming up on June 17th, right here in Lake Havasu City. Stay with us. Speak Out. We'll return. All right, welcome back to Speak Out again. The Candidates Forum, June 17th at the Lake Havasu High School, at the PAC, the Performing Arts Center at Lake Havasu High School. And 5:30 will be the start time. We'll carry it live here on KNTR Talk. And, of course, brought to you by the Lake Havasu Area Chamber, by the Today's News Herald, and, of course, by Radio Central. And a clear, clear difference in candidates on the Republican side. You can hear Elijah Norton's interview on May 7th, I believe, was the air date. And Catherine did a great job, and it's a toss-up in my mind. Anyway, enough editorializing. We have River Dave on Monday. That's like the talk of the town right now. River Dave's going to be on the radio on Monday. That's right, right here on Speak Out, live in the studio at 11 o'clock. And then on Tuesday, we have Grace Hecht. I believe she's coming in. And Needles Mayor Janet Jernigan is going to be here as well. They're going to talk about the big 100 years of Route 66 celebration that's coming up. So far, the Real Estate Power Hour is intact for Wednesday. Sam Scarmato and Neil Tinsley on Thursday. And then our write-in candidate, John Grappentine, on Friday. That does it for me. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This is KNTR Talk, KGJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.